Hi, everybody. This is Tracy Malone. I am the founder of NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. This is a resource for victims of narcissistic abuse. I use this podcast and this YouTube channel to interview experts that might overlap your recovery. Today, I'm going to welcome Annie Blythe. She's the founder and the CEO of the Betrayal Trauma Recovery Network, and she is a survivor of narcissistic abuse, and that was at the hands of her porn-addicted ex. She's got some great stories. She's got a great podcast, and you can find her on YouTube as well. They have a wonderful video that they just made, a music video that really tugs at your heart. So if you got an opportunity to visit her YouTube channel, I strongly suggest that you do. Annie and I have so many similarities in our recovery, but turning our pain into helping others is what we really have in common. And she helps educate and heal people just like I do. So it's kind of cool. I want to welcome her today because she has been doing amazing things in this arena. So without any further ado, let's welcome Annie.
Thank you for having me on, Tracy. It's good to be here.
Well, I am so excited that you're here because I think our last video was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was a while.
Yeah. So what you do is you help women who have been abused by porn addict. So I want to start off really right out of the gate understanding what the definition of a porn addict is, because so many people and survivors, especially in my narcissistic abuse world, it overlaps and it just becomes another piece of the puzzle. And there's so much to overwhelm them that this isn't isolated enough for them to understand if it's really going on, how to handle it. So can you define what a porn addict is?
Yeah, so a porn addict is someone who compulsively uses pornography and who lies about their pornography use and does not obtain the consent of their partner. So for example, someone whose partner says, hey, I don't feel comfortable with porn, I don't want you to use porn. And a porn addict would be like, oh yeah, I don't use it. And then they would continue to use it secretly. And the word addiction is really interesting here. My contention is that all pornography use is abusive. Some people don't feel like that. Some people disagree. But I would say that in every case where where someone does not want their partner using pornography, if their partner uses it and does not tell them, we have a consent issue and it's a sexual coercion problem. So that is what we're talking about with porn addiction, is are you using it secretly, and is this a behavior that you're engaging in that your partner feels uncomfortable with?
Right. Yeah. Can a female be a porn addict?
Yeah, there are many, many women who are addicted to porn or who are using porn when their husband does not want them to, or their partner.
Wow. Okay. Now, because this is a channel about narcissistic abuse, I know there's a tie-in together. Do you see a great amount of these porn-addicted people in the narcissistic realm as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say so many of the behaviors that the definition of porn addict or sex addict would cover just completely overlap. They're one and the same. So what I like to tell people is the abusive behaviors that we're looking for, whether or not it's a narcissistic issue or whether or not it's an addiction issue, are the same, right? We're looking for lying, manipulation, gaslighting. We're looking for entitlement issues where they don't take your needs into consideration, but they're just focused on their own needs. So all of these things really overlap and they're very similar. And it really doesn't matter what the cause is, whether the cause is narcissism or whether the cause is pornography addiction or whatever it is. To the victim, it's all abuse.
Right.
All abuse.
But does the legal system consider it abuse?
No, it doesn't. But the legal system also doesn't consider narcissistic abuse.
No, I just don't know if you got like an extra credit or something.
No, there are 13 states now that have passed laws saying that pornography is a public health crisis. So we might start moving there more and more. There were, I think, I'm not sure how many porn actresses who recently sued their producer for sexual coercion, saying that they did not give full consent for what happened. We know that happens most of the time with pornography. And so, and they were awarded $12 million. So pornography also always has this consent issue with it. And generally speaking, when you're watching pornography, you are watching someone who has been a victim of sex trafficking or sexual coercion.
Wow. That's a scary number.
Yeah, it is. So more and more porn performers are starting to do lawsuits about this. And a lot of them, they'll say, like the pornographers will say, you must do this video at the beginning saying how you consent to this. And if you don't, we won't pay you, which is coercion. Right there, right? So they'll do that. And the reason why they have to do that is because like Visa and MasterCard, they have decided that they won't process payments if someone hasn't given consent. But the consent is also coerced. And you see that with narcissism as well. The consent is coerced. For example, they paint this picture of someone who, I act this way, this is what I'm like, to obtain your consent, to marry them, to get a joint bank account, to get a home together, whatever it is. But you never are able to actually give consent because you don't have all the information, because they have manipulated you, they have lied to you, and other various things. So when it comes to pornography use and narcissism, this consent issue is really overlapping.
Yeah, I would imagine. And I would imagine that Joy Short is a really good person when you end up talking with her, because she's all about consent.
Yeah, she's going to come on my podcast really soon. So my podcast is Betrayal Trauma Recovery, and she'll be coming on to talk about consent in the next few months.
Yay, I'm so glad. That's a great introduction, because you guys really overlap in many ways. So changing the law, she's started battling doing things, so I'm sure she'll be able to help you along the way. I know that when someone discovers this, and sometimes they are openly knowing it, right? There are people in two camps where they know they're doing it, and and they don't like it, and they're complaining, and they're saying, no, that's not okay.
Right.
Other times where the victim, like me, I didn't know my husband had a porn addiction.
Right.
And then one day I found $1,000 on our credit card bill. And I talked to his parents, and they were like, oh no, not again. And I was like, what do you mean not again? Where did that come from? That this is the first time with me, is something I should know. So it was a shock to me. So how does someone actually get help? Are there counselors designed for this? And I know there's different kind of certifications that they want to be aware of. And I want you to educate us on that.
Yeah. So this is a big problem, because the sexual addiction recovery community does not view this as abuse. Just like your typical therapist doesn't really recognize narcissistic abuse. Mm-hmm. So if you go down the pornography addiction route, you are going to be continually abused, is pretty much what's going to happen if you're the victim. So if you find your husband using porn and you're like, oh, okay, I want to stop this. I don't want this in my marriage. He keeps doing it. I keep finding it. I keep knowing he's doing it. And then you try to go down the sexual addiction route, you're going to get basically told that he's sick, and that you need to be patient, and there's going to be slip-ups, and wait a year before making any decisions. Nobody's going to say, you need to get to safety, mm-hmm. right? And so the only place we recommend for men who are exhibiting these abusive behaviors, again, women can participate in this, but the two organizations that I'm involved in, we only do it in a gender segregated way to keep people safe. So Center for Peace, which is CENFP.org, it deals with these behaviors from an abuse perspective. So if you are engaging in chronically lying about and chronically manipulating and chronically using pornography, you're engaging in abusive behaviors and you need to stop. That is the way that Center for Peace addresses it. It does not come at it from a sex addiction standpoint. And I don't think that that way of going about it really helps people stop their abusive behaviors. Now, There are a lot of people that go through Center for Peace who will not give up their entitlements. They will not tell the truth. And for them, there's no hope for them. Mm-hmm. There just isn't. Just similarly with narcissists. Now, whether or not they're actually going to be diagnosed as a narcissist or not, who knows? But we do know if people aren't going to, if they're not able to be honest, accountable, humble, and willing to submit to the consequences of their actions, they can't change. They have to do that. On the victim side, we also do it as an abuse issue. So basically, if you are married to an active pornography user and you do not want pornography in your relationship, this is a sexual boundary that you have, and he continues to do it, lie about it, manipulate you, whatever, you're in an abusive relationship. That's what's happening. Because your partner is engaging in a behavior that is extremely harmful to you and harmful to your relationship and doesn't really care. Right? That's an abuse issue. If it's, you really want him to wear blue and he's like, no, I really, really like blue. I'm sorry you disagree, but I'm going to wear blue. That's not an abuse issue. But pornography use, lying, all of that, that's definitely abuse.
Yeah, well, when you add in the gaslighting and the lying, and it's a way of cheating in a way, you know. Yeah. Infidelity doesn't necessarily have to be that they're having sex with someone else. If this is sort of a third party in your relationship and you don't want it, mm-hmm. you have the right to say no.
Well, and pornography use involves masturbation. That's why people use porn. They use it to masturbate, right? So they're having a sexual relationship with an inanimate object, meaning their computer or their phone. Mm-hmm. And even though they're masturbating to pictures of real people who are being coerced and exploited on the other end, which also begs the question, do you really want to have sex with someone who is turned on by people being abused? Like, I don't want people who get aroused by abuse. No, thank you, right? So that begs that question, but they're having a sexual relationship with someone that's not you or something that is not you. And that, if you don't want that in your relationship, that is, you have every right to say, my sexual boundary is monogamy. Mm-hmm. I want you to be faithful to me. I will be faithful to you. If you don't want to be, that's totally cool. You need to be upfront about it and tell me flat out, I'm not going to be monogamous. That's not who I am. That's not what I'm going to do. Then we don't get into that consent issue, right? Because they're being honest. And then you can say, okay, well, this relationship won't work out then.
Right, exactly. You're given a choice. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Boundary. Yeah, totally. But most average therapists, like your run-of-the-mill therapist that doesn't understand narcissistic abuse, also doesn't understand this.
Right. So,
I would also say
your run-of-the-mill sex addiction therapist doesn't understand this.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. So you have created something, the Betrayal Trauma Recovery.
Betrayal Trauma Recovery.
Yes, I get it all screwed up. I want to go Betrayal Trauma. I get it
very
all.
Very long Betrayal Trauma Recovery, which is why we shorten it to BTR quite a bit. So this is for victims who have experienced this type of betrayal in the form of lies, deception, manipulation regarding someone's porn use and infidelity. And it's from the ongoing abuse. It's from the ongoing abuse that happens to them. Now, again, for my particular organization, it is gender segregated. So Betrayal Trauma Recovery is only for women victims of male perpetrators. Someday maybe someone will start an organization for male victims of female perpetrators. But as you know, many narcissists or many abusive people, they claim that the other person is the abuser. And so because of that, I just wanted to make it 100% safe for female victims so that there's no men in there that are like, oh, she did this and she did that, because that's exactly what my ex says. That's exactly what your ex says. And it's really, really triggery for women right out of the gate. So our Betrayal Trauma Recovery group, we have about 20 sessions a week. There are multiple sessions a day in multiple time zones. People can jump on at any time. It's only for women. It's really safe. The average amount of women in there is usually about 4 to 6 women. And we have a professional Betrayal Trauma Recovery coach who is trained and certified in trauma. There to help her process what's happening and also set boundaries so she can get to safety very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And this is this what I love about your model is that the person that comes to join your group and your organization is paying a flat fee for the month. And in 20 sessions a week, you can come as much as you want. Yeah. So if you want to do three, if you're in desperate need, I know that you also have a thing like that you can see a counselor within a few hours or something like that, right?
Yeah. So for our individual sessions, all of our coaches do at least one group session. So if you're part of the group, you can meet any of them at any time. And then you can also set up individual sessions. Some people don't like the group format or they just want to schedule it at any time. One reason the group is so great is you never have to schedule or wait for an appointment. You can just hop on and go, which is great. And then a lot of women, they feel like they might need a little bit more support, so they'll schedule an individual session. But you can schedule individual sessions without being a member of the group, so you could do whatever works for you. But we have found that because so many people don't understand this and they might go to clergy first, right? Or therapy first or something like that, or even their friends or family. We see that a lot too, right? You go to your family and say, he's acting really weird. And they're like, he's such a good guy. Maybe he's hungry. You know, maybe it's because he lost his job recently, or, you know, they give excuses.
Or maybe if you didn't eat that extra piece of cake, he'd be more turned on to you. It's your fault.
Or, well, you wouldn't have sex with him because you were sick. So what was he supposed to do?
Yeah.
I don't know. Not have sex with other people? It's weird, but, you know. What, their balls aren't going to fall off, you know? They'll be fine.
What they learned in elementary school.
Yeah. Men's sexual needs are not any more important than your need for safety and your need for monogamy. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. It's not an excuse. There's no reason. So if anybody says that, well, what else was he supposed to do? Just the weirdest thing. Not masturbate, not have sex, not look at porn. It's not really rocket science, people.
It's very victim blaming, you know, when they find this out and you try to tell the wrong people, which, you know, I see when they come into my support groups, they have been so bashed and bashed that the victim blaming, you know, that's where they've lost a lot of their self-confidence. They're going to the wrong people for help.
Exactly.
Their friends, their clergy, even their therapist that doesn't get it, and they're getting those dumb answers that we just discussed. So it's so important to find the right kind of help.
Yeah.
It's so targeted and so exact, and what you have built is so powerful. So I am so grateful, and I know that you have an amazing podcast, and I would love for you to just talk to that, tell people how they can find you on that, because if you are, you know, struggling with this, anybody out there in YouTube land or podcast land, you need to get the right help. You need to tap into this network and listen to some of the experts and then find some good counseling and start to move on from there. So tell me about your podcast.
So just like viewers will know that listening to Tracy has helped them understand all these elements. Oh, excuse me. Hang on. Pardon me. All these elements of narcissism that they didn't have words for before. My podcast is all about taking the sex addiction model and defining all of the ways that it hurts victims and does not hold perpetrators accountable. And as people listen to that podcast, sorry, I'm not crying. I'm just recovering from my coughing fit, but as women listen to the podcast, they tell me things like, oh, I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know what to call this. I didn't know what to say. And I think as we define it, the more empowered victims become. Mm-hmm. And so the purpose of the podcast, it's entirely free, is just to empower victims to have a language to start talking about what happened. I think the other thing is so many people don't talk about these things that when you hear stories from other victims, and I have other victims on all the time, they're like, oh, that happened to me. Oh, someone's talking about it, and it can give you courage. So empowerment and courage are the two goals of the podcast. And I get emails all the time, and on our reviews on the podcast on iTunes or other places, women will say, this helped me more than 15 years of therapy. You know, why did I do that? Why did I spend that much? One woman said, we spent $10,000 going to a sex addiction therapist. And then when I started listening to listening to you and your podcast, things changed for me immediately. I knew what to do. I knew what was going on. What was happening was her therapist was saying, well, he's lying, but the reason why he's lying is because you're not safe enough to tell the truth to. So really what we need to work on is you need to be safe and then he'll tell the truth. Well, that's completely backwards. Completely backwards.
That's freaking blame me. Yeah. Now, I know that we mentioned therapy, but I also wanted to, I don't know that we said this because I'm brain dead 5 seconds ago, but did we talk about the danger in couples counseling with something like this?
Yeah.
It is. In the narcissistic world, it's a real bad thing, but in your world, it's also bad.
Yeah. So a lot of sex addiction therapists, especially certified sex addiction therapist, which is called CSAT, they'll do couple work. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Do you not know about domestic abuse? Apparently they don't. But we also do not recommend couple therapy at all until the abusive behaviors have stopped. Now, with narcissistic abuse, right, it's very difficult to tell if it is stopped, because they hoover and they like make you seem like everything is fine for a while until what the next episode happens and you know that it's not. So all of us who have been through this, and I have too, once you start recognizing the cycle, you can get out of it. But I do think it takes a little bit of time to see the cycle, right? I mean, unfortunately, when I started podcasting, I thought, how can I help victims like not ever be in the cycle in the first place? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's possible. I mean, it might be if they know about narcissism, they know what to look for beforehand. But otherwise, like once you're in it, it's hard to see until you've been through the cycle a couple times, right? And so what happens in couple therapy is that the cycle is just labeled as the dance, right? You do this, he do this. Oh, you keep doing this, so he keeps doing this. And it's just this, it takes two to tango thing. And they never get out of the, no, there's a victim here and there's a perpetrator. And he needs to stay safe and he needs to stop his abusive behaviors. And what would work, which never happens, is if he could be held accountable until those behaviors have completely stopped.
Right.
But instead, he'll just leave. What is it called when they ditch the victim?
The discard.
Yeah, there we go. The discard. He'll just leave. He won't go back to that therapist when they start catching on, and he'll just do it with new people that don't know.
Exactly. I know. Well, I know you've got to go, so I want to thank you so much. We're going to tell everybody to come to btr.org. When we process this video, we'll put that across the bottom so people can reach out. Go and listen to her podcast. She's a wealth of information, and visit her website, because if you're struggling with this and you need answers, she's the girl. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Tracy. I appreciate your time.